Good afternoon, Dr. Dan Guerrero's Authentic Biochemistry Podcast. Today, of course, is the 23rd February, 2024, which puts this on a Friday afternoon. So this might be the coda for our discussion of the biochemical mosaic number one, which has been trying to focus on the role of a particular phospholipid phosphatase, the lipin enzymes, on cellular metabolism. And again, what I'm doing with the mosaic is I'm juxtaposing the interaction of a series of metabolic pathways, such as phosphoglycerolipid biosynthesis, with protein expression and cellular maintenance and then induction related to various stages of stress phenomena, immune response, and then the progression of a potential cancer. Okay. And I think we've pretty much accomplished that. But I've got a little bit more I can say about phosphatidic acid phosphatase, and really more about how lipids change the molecular event structure of membranes, simply because of charge distribution. And that charge distribution relates to their affinity and effect on membrane-embedded polypeptides. And not only an effect on those proteins in terms of generating some kind of salt bridge between the protein and the lipid, but more than that, altering the intramembranous fluidity so that a signaling can occur in a coherent, high fidelity manner. And that gives you then the mosaic effect. This concept of endomembranous systems or the plasma membrane as being essentially a barrier between one compartment to another, which is the error in almost all biological training, both undergraduate and graduate, and medical school, etc., because the membrane is an active component. It is an eventual system that's always turning over. It's not turning over simply because there's a remodeling of the membrane associated with the aging of the cell or signaling. It's that the membrane itself, acting as both a dynamic and kinetic player in cellular interaction within tissues, then ultimately regulating entire organs and the body in general. So these membrane lipids and what they're able to do just with polypeptides, and of course their solvency or lack of solvency in aqueous, will play a significant role in how cells function, right? So that is a tremendous insight into living systems that I think is often overlooked in cell biology courses, molecular genetics, biochemistry, etc. Some of it gets covered, I think, in immunology, because in immunology, we're always talking about cell interactions. There's so many different cell types to talk about. But even there, there's a big neglect on what's going on with the membrane. And that's what I'm trying to do here. Okay, so let's see what we can do to turn this into a coda. So we're talking about phosphatidic acid and the fact that phosphatidic acid can be deprotonated, and that deprotonation can signal effector molecule activation, all within the membrane. So be aware of the fact that hydrogen bonding increases the charge of phosphatidic acid as well as lysophosphatidic acid, because the phosphomonoester head group of LPA will form an intramolecular hydrogen bond. So in the protonated phosphomonoester of LPA. A proton is actually shared between two hydroxyl oxygens. And hydrogen bonding between the SN2 hydroxyl and the phosphomonoester of LPA will compete with that shared proton for the oxygen electrons, which of course will do what? Well, it will facilitate the dissociation of the proton. And what will that effectively do to the chemistry of the system? It'll lower the pKa. And that's where we were last time. So hydrogen bonding between the phosphomonoester of phosphatidic acid, not the LPA, but just PA, the parent compound, if you will, where both fatty acids in one and two position of the glycerol backbone. The primary amine of the head group of PE, or even a lysine or an arginine residue in a protein, will result in the deprotonation of that phosphomonoester. And that will lower the pKa and thus increase its overall negative charge. Okay? So you see now the dynamics that are going on here. So cellular pH, recall, under very tight metabolic control, because it must modulate accurately and precisely the ionization of all the different molecular species in which that level of protonation is going to determine ultimate biological function. And here we're talking about lipids and proteins. So mostly about lipids at this juncture of this lecture. So the establishment of the lipid phosphomonoester core center complex to appropriate the biosensing of biological cellular pH is ultimately then obtained. So the electrostatic hydrogen bond, we could call that a switching mechanism, explains at least partially the ability of that phosphomonoester to form hydrogen bonds. With what? With lipids or proteins, as I just said. For example, lysine residues and arginine residues and polypeptides. And then that overall demonstrates the source of the pH sensing mechanism and thus results in a pH-dependent effector binding. You see? So it generates a mechanism which allows for effector binding, which allows for signaling. And ultimately, the correct communication system within the membrane relative to whatever is external or internal to that component of the intermembranous system. Okay? So gives you a little bit more of the detail. Now, what the argument is that proteins will surveil a charged state of membrane phospholipids, such as phosphatidic acid. But at the same time, while that surveillance is going on, there will be a dampening effect on the hydrophobic interactions that normally occur at the membrane surface, because there's going to be a direct interaction between polypeptide and the membrane phospholipid when it is anionic in character. But we can talk about the cationic mode as well. Right now, we're just talking about the anionic, because we're talking about phosphatidic acid. So, and remember too that some of these phospholipids can exist in Zwitter ionic state, giving it a neutral state, but that has to do with the alteration of pH that can occur in the intermembranous system. And remember that the intermembranous system, for example, between the two membranes in the mitochondria, will become acidified transiently during the electron transport chain function and oxidative phosphorylation. So that whole role of phosphatidic acid regulating the fusion-fission that we talked about and much of this mosaic is obviously another comportment around the association of the phospholipids and not just the enzymes like the phosphohydrolase. But the phosphohydrolase itself then, because it's a protein, will be interacting with those lipids. In fact, it'll bind to its substrate. Remember that as a significant aspect, right? So what I'm talking about is a mechanism for phosphatidic acid and indeed all the other anionic lipids to play a role in biosensing of membrane charge density and control over the effects of pH and the pKa values of the lipids associated with those membranes, which will then alter the bonding of those phospholipids with the proteins that are held in annular encapsulation. Remember the annular lipids versus the non-annular lipids, right? So it's of course possible that any lipid phosphomonoester, such as the phosphoinositol phosphate, ceramide 1-phosphate, sphingosine 1-phosphate, disoglycerol pyrophosphate, might also all function as in situ pH biosensors. Because it's the same chemistry, you see? Electrochemistry. So it's likely that when you think about why we find specific molecular species of membrane lipids in a given membrane in association with a given consort of polypeptides is that the biochemical interaction between the polypeptide and those various molecular species of lipid are absolutely required for the biological activity of that membrane. And that most of what the membrane is doing is maintaining that functional ability. And the functional ability then is what we read out as signaling, as secretion, or anything else that's going on in the membrane. Right? So you see how that works. So a lot of people like to argue about, you know, biochemical evolution. And I told you I have an issue with that because I'm still trying to get a handle on what would be the selection pressure for something so involved as multiple molecular species interdigitation within membranes to function just exactly so. So, you know, when you think about molecular evolution as opposed to organismal, you have to ask the question, if what we're finding in the cell and we're describing in biochemistry terms, if what we're finding is from a source of gene expression regulating all the polypeptide levels, ultimately then coordinating the production of all the lipids within the membrane, both mitochondrial genome and nuclear genome being involved, and then that translates to the composition at one level and then the sequence of the membrane at the deeper level in association with polypeptide, because the sequence of a membrane isn't just lipid, it's lipid and polypeptide. In fact, it's domains of polypeptide with domains of different kinds of phosphoglycerolipids and sphingolipids. Or if it goes the other way, if the so-called biochemical evolution comes from the bottom up, that the coalescence of various aliphatic hydrocarbons, some of which I have carboxylic acid functional groups, forming around simple carbohydrate structures and amino acid structures, then formulated a membranous system, which started to function as not just that barrier generating what is external and internal to a cell, which in my argument is the very first event for a living system, because you have to have outside inside, and it has to be selectively permeable for communication purposes because of nutrition, for example, and removal of waste products on the other hand, right? So could it have started from the bottom up or the top down? It seems like the more coherent understanding of this is from the bottom up. So that living systems evolved as the membranous structure evolved. And then ultimately that led to various kinds of catalytic events generated by catalytic RNA, for example, and even catalytic components of short chain polypeptides with lipids. And that platform then ultimately was responsible for generating pathways such as the very basic mediation of not just nucleotide biosynthesis, but polymeric nucleotide biosynthesis. But this again, you know, it's not something that we can demonstrate in the cell. We can say what's in the cell, what's going on there, but we're not capable of generating life from the monomeric components of lipids or amino acids for lipids for membranes or amino acids for proteins or nucleic acids for DNA and RNA. All right. So whatever it ultimately resulted in the living system still requires something we have not yet grasped. And what that overall would be is a regulation of the control over a composite system that would maintain that composite system and at the same time generate a living cell that can reproduce. Right. That's a tall order for asking for biochemical evolution to come up with that, see? So, but it's interesting to deal with that. You know, you could be skeptical about the actual mechanism, eo ipso, living systems, from, you know, top down or bottom up. And in so doing, we can understand better how living systems function. And as a biochemist, that's really what our job is. Okay. So, as a dielectric here, I can say that membrane phospholipids with a phosphomonoester chemistry will correctly sense pH, pH gradients, that is, and can, as a result of that, induce effector signal transduction cascades with polypeptides. Because the dielectric is between the lipid and the polypeptide, generating a mechanism for signal transduction. And I can also say the mechanism allows for high level of specificity between protein and lipid and their interaction in situ. Because you need a specific, like the pH domain, remember the plextrin homology domain. You need a specific run of, for example, basic amino acids. And that run of amino acids in association then with anionic lipids starts to form the correct platform to carry out the biological function. And in this case, we could talk about signal transduction, secretion, or whatever you want. So the fluctuation of cellular pH is obviously something common for signal transduction because we talk about titrating membranes via protonation, deprotonation. The same thing could be said about the titrating of protons for amino acids, right? And that relates to the function of the polypeptides, R group, and what enzymes are capable of doing with the R group in terms of, for example, catalysis or structural domains, right? So the fluctuation in cellular pH, of course, is common for signal transduction and bioenergetics. Those are two simple things we can talk about. Obviously, the cellular pH fluctuation for bioenergetics is the electron transport chain. And that membrane, the inner membrane of the mitochondria, regulating proton flux, right, via chemiosmosis. So we can conclude that membrane lipids, such as sphingosine-1-phosphate and ceramide-1-phosphate, could also be involved in the electrostatic hydrogen bonding molecular alteration that is necessary for normal membrane function, along with the phosphatidic acid and lysophosphatidic acid that we've been talking about primarily. Okay? Now, phosphatidic acid binding, that polybasic domain, is going to be responsible also for the regulation of the phosphorylation of lipins, which of course is the phosphatidic acid phosphatase. So there are three different isoforms of lipin. 1, 2, 3. They are magnesium-dependent phosphatidic acid phosphohydrolases, of course. And they catalyze that second to the last step in triacylglycerol synthesis in the canonical Kennedy pathway. But we also know that lipins 1 and 2, binding to phosphatidic acid, particularly protonated phosphatidic acid, so it's dianionic, right, will augment their activity and the activity of the enzyme and lipid binding. And that lipin 1 activity is actually negatively regulated by phosphorylation. Now, that negative interaction doesn't have to do actually with the catalytic site, remember? It has to do with the fact that if the protein is phosphorylated by mTOR, for example, the reason that the protein has a hard time turning over phosphatidic acid diacylglycerol is because of the charge that's been added by the phosphate, so that it's difficult to bind to its substrate, phosphatidic acid. Remember that? So that polybasic domain composed of 9 lysine and arginine residues are located in those very specific domains of all the lipin enzymes. And that is the site where phosphatidic acid binding and the sensing of the phosphatidic acid's specific electrostatic charge, remember the either the mono or the di anionic form, will then dictate the activity of the phosphohydrolase relative to its binding to any other components of the phospholipid matrix. And so the specific arrangement and number of those lysines and arginines are not always the same in each of those isoforms of lipins. They're separated out by different amino acid islands. So that means that part of the regulation of the three different isoforms of lipins has to do with the polybasic domain segregation within the amino acid sequence of those three different enzyme forms. And that may have to do more with the regulation, sort of an auto-regulation of enzymatic activity. Now, think back about the membrane component in association with an inner mitochondrial membrane. Yeah. All right. So what else we want to say here? You remember that every cellular system, every tissue, you could say, is going to be associated with a specific composition of extracellular matrix. And that extracellular matrix that is associated with cellular mass in a tissue is going to give that cellular mass and tissue unique physical and mechanical properties. So those mechanical properties, as you know, have something to do with the tissue event ontology. That is its function. So cells have to sense the mechanical properties of their associated extracellular matrix. And now we know how that works. That works through integrin and integrin receptors, which measures and adjusts the various alterations of contractility of the F-actin cytoskeleton. And that contractility is maximal when the cells are free to spread across their associated extracellular matrix. Okay. So that system helps control cell-cell contact and cell communication that can lead to such major physiological functions as proliferation, differentiation, programmed cell death. And what's going on then is a regulation of intracellular signaling pathways. Obviously, it has to work that way, right? There are various proteins involved. There is one called the YAP protein, which is the yes-associated protein. And YAP is localized with TAS protein, which is a transcriptional coactivator with a PDC binding motif. Okay? So that system of how contractility of cells, as you might understand with the extracellular matrix, is going to necessarily involve lipid interactions. Okay? So there's a lot to draw through all of this. And I really want to finish, I want to make this the coda for this mosaic. So there's not really a whole lot I can talk about, except that lipids tend to be modified during that mechanosensing event. And one of the proteins involved is called actomyosin. And actomyosin is the causal agent for contractility. Okay. And so when you examine that, you find that nuclear lipin 1 is associated specifically with an inactivation. This is part of the signaling, right? Inactivation of that steroid response binding protein. Remember, that was the very beginning what we did at this mosaic. And the reason that is because lipin 1 is going to be associated with alterations of lipid metabolism going back to the ER and Golgi. And so the whole phosphorylation cascade with mTOR regulating transcriptional reprogramming of the cell, going now examining this mechanosensing system with those proteins I just mentioned to you, has to lead to nuclear events related to control over transcription. So the lipin 1 acts negatively to control the steroid response element binding protein. And how does lipin 1, remember, get into the nucleus? It must be dephosphorylated. So that dephosphoenzyme then cannot have been phosphorylated by mTORC. And so when mTORC is regulating cellular migration, say, towards an anabolic mode or a programmed cell death mode when it's being turned down, or indeed for cell division, one of the features that's being linked together is cholesterol biosynthesis for the SRE program transcriptome, and the lipin 1 as a sensor for phosphoglycerol lipid and sphingolipid metabolism. So I'll leave you with that. So next time we meet, we're going to have a new topic. Dr. Dan Guerra from Authentic Biochemistry Podcast, saying bye for now.